It's something I say there's also history too, you know, coming from a long way of going through this situation with the same police officers, and pretty much you steer clear, you know, to stay out the way so you wouldn't end up in this situation. But ending up in this situation was a part of me, you know, staying clear. So I'm astounded. I'm real happy that it's finally come to a point where they're getting you know, getting a feeling of what they dish out to people, you know, day in, day out.
And I really misspoke, because it's not a deal. They have pled guilty. The idea that they call themselves, Eddie Parker, that they call themselves the Goon Squad, your thoughts?
Oh, that's the Goon Squad. That's that seems to be a crime organization as well. They were paid to go out and you know, to stop. But they became that themselves. I believe policing and, you know, the public, you know, go hand in hand. I mean, they're people just like us. You know, they want to be held accountable for, you know, everything they do. They want to get, you know, this, you know, certain, I guess you say, the end of the stick treatment as, you know, being the golden ones. But they're not. They're people just like us. I mean, they go out and they do, you know, the opposite of what they're getting paid to do. I think it's very horrendous how they can call themselves, you know, Goon Squad, and, you know, still put on a badge and say they're protecting people.
Malik Shabazz, your lawsuit also mentions other times Rankin County Sheriff deputies used excessive force. I want to ask you about Damian Cameron, who died in 2021 after being taken into custody by the same Rankin County Sheriff's deputies who later attacked Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker. This is a clip from a WAPT news report featuring Jenkins' mother, Monica Lee.
A news release from the Rankin County Sheriff's Office says deputies got a call about a burglary and vandalism. When they arrived, Damian was identified as the suspect. The release says as a deputy approached him, he began to fight and resist arrest. They were able to eventually get him into custody and into a patrol car.
And I'm thinking they're taking my son to jail. So I go outside to tell my son goodbye and I love him and I'll be up there tomorrow. At that point, when I got to the side of the truck, my son was laid on the ground, unresponsive.
Monica Lee has said she believes if the sheriff had taken action against the deputies involved in her son's death, maybe they would not have gone on to attack Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker. The lawsuit also holds Sheriff Bailey responsible for failing to properly train the deputies involved in these incidents. This is Rankin County Sheriff Brian Bailey speaking last week about the charges his former deputies pled guilty to.
Based on the facts in their guilty pleas, all of the former deputies lied to me that night of this incident in January. We have cooperated fully with all outside investigating agencies to uncover the truth and bring justice to the victims. We've also sought assistance from outside agencies and consultants to help us in repairing our trust with the community.
So that was Rankin County Sheriff Brian Bailey speaking last week. Malik Shabazz, the civil rights attorney who has brought the lawsuit on behalf of Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker, if you can respond to the sheriff and to this previous case.
Yes. First of all, I want to give honors to Miss Monica Lee, who was the mother of Damian Cameron, attorney Trent Walker, and myself. We represent Miss Monica Lee for the death of Damian Cameron, which occurred at the hands of the Rankin County Sheriff's Department and its officers, including Hunter Elward, the shooter who didn't just shoot Michael Jenkins in his mouth. He placed the gun inside Michael Jenkins' mouth and held it for an extended period of time, almost up to a minute, before he intentionally shot Michael Jenkins in his mouth, attempting to kill him. Yes, Ms. Lee is correct. If they would not have participated in a cover-up around Damian Cameron's death. Damian Cameron's death is analogous and very similar to George Floyd's death. It was Hunter Elwood and Luke Stickman who put the knees on Damian Cameron's back and on his neck, causing trauma to his neck and causing hemorrhages in both of Damian Cameron's eyes, meaning that the compression on his neck is what led to asphyxiation and his actual cause of death. But the autopsy, mysteriously, was ruled undetermined. With all of the evidence that I'm saying and all of the gruesome photos of the neck injuries and the hemorrhages of the eyes bulging out of his head, the autopsy finding was mysteriously undetermined. The autopsy itself is missing certain information, and therefore, myself and Black Lawyers for Justice, we have our own forensic pathologist who are coming forth shortly to show you that this was a homicide and that Rankin County and Brian Bailey refused to provide the state medical examiner with information to reach a proper conclusion because they were all protecting the officers from criminal prosecution. Therefore, the autopsy is suspicious. The autopsy and the efforts to have a genuine autopsy, it was covered up by Rankin County. And Brian Bailey has been a part of this. Ms. Lee is correct. If they hadn't been trying to cover up, if Bailey hadn't been trying to justify his officers, no, he didn't just not train them. He has participated in acts of excessive force with his department, according to the courts. When Hunter Elwood shot Pierre Woods in Rankin County on the ground and he gunned him and he shot him 9 times with his rifle and the man was no threat to him, Sheriff Bailey was on the scene and a federal judge ruled that Bailey could not have qualified immunity because he ratified and watched it all go on in person. And so the truth is coming out about the death of Damian Cameron and how they had the knees on his neck like his mother has testified by affidavit to. And they had the knees on his neck that crushed the life out of Damian Cameron. And they did nothing about it. They've lied to us, but we're going to bring that case. That case is coming back to life. Rankin County is infested with white supremacists, Ku Klux Klan. They infiltrated the sheriff's department. Brian Bailey has known about this. Many of these criminals were on duty up until June 1st, only through the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation and U.S. Department of Justice leader Kristen Clark and her Southern District in Mississippi, who've done a great job. Only through their efforts has Brian Bailey, sheriff, trying to come to some remorse. He has not even apologized to the victims. We demand that Brian Bailey step down now. He's a part of a pattern of practice and a culture and a custom of terrorism by his department. We have blacks, whites, rich, poor. They have been beaten by his officers. He's known this all along. And the struggle continues in this case for compensation for these two suffering victims, Jenkins and Parker, but for all of the victims of Rankin County terrorism. It's the number one county for terrorism and white supremacist infiltration. Case in point for our close, Christian Detman. It's coming out. He has family members that have pled guilty in Mississippi to hate crimes. I mean, a lot more is going to come out about this. Rankin County is infested with white supremacists, Ku Klux Klan, and it's in the police departments.
And Malik Shabazz, can you place Rankin County for us in two ways, in history and also geographically? It's right near Jackson, the capital?
Yes. Attorney Trent Walker says, who grew up in Rankin County, my partner, Attorney Trent Walker, states that this was customary in Rankin County. They beat first, and they don't ask questions later. They beat you, they kill you, and you are ordered not to say anything about it. Hunter Elwood, the shooter, actually pled guilty in federal court to another crime he had committed, which contained a similar fact to what he did in the home of Jenkins and Parker. When these deputies busted in to begin this torture session, Hunter Elwood shot his gun off as an intimidation against Jenkins and Parker. Before he shot Michael, later he shot his gun off. Well, he pled guilty in federal court to doing the same thing to another person in Rankin County. He's just shooting his gun off like that. So what we're saying, ma'am, is that all of these truths are going to come to light. Rankin County has done this for a long time. It's near Jackson, Mississippi. Jackson, Mississippi, and I believe the county is sort of a reaction to Jackson. Jackson is in Hinds County. It's majority black, and there's hostility towards Jackson. And Rankin is like a white enclave that is next to Jackson, and it's set up like a, almost like a political, social antithesis or against Jackson. And so they're clear in Rankin, just 20 minutes away from Jackson, Mississippi, just like these deputies said. They didn't want any black men living in the area. The mere fact that there were black men in this area, that they were going to carry out this mission and let them know that they were not welcome and they were going to violate all laws and break in. It's because they have determined, I believe these deputies and others in that county have determined, that Rankin County is for whites and Hinds County is for blacks. And they're going to enforce it through the under the color of law, through violence and torture. Not to mention, especially on this program, we cannot forget waterboarding. Waterboarding was where the United States military was condemned for using these techniques at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, in the Iraq War. The military denounced this. But in 2023, incredibly, in Rankin County, these deputies, Elwood, McAlpin, Detman, Updike, Middleton, Hartsfield, they actually waterboarded the two men you see now. They had them on their backs. They had them handcuffs. They had them intimidated, and they were pouring milk, liquids, and grease all over their faces in this insane interrogation and intimidation act. Then after they did all this, can you imagine law enforcement with dildos and sexual devices in their possession, attempting and putting it in the mouths? I hate to say this, that happened to the brothers, but we got to know their pain and suffering. To take a dildo and to shove it in the mouths of handcuffed and bound men, and then and waterboard them like that on the ground, and then hurl eggs at them, and then make them strip naked in the shower to try to clean this mess up, strip these men naked in front of these criminals. You know, it just never fails to ignite my passion. And therefore, tactically and strategically, we are after Rankin County and we won't let up.
I want to end with the voices of Michael, Corey Jenkins, and Eddie Terrell Parker. How you have lived through the aftermath of this, the trauma that you have experienced, and what you want to come out of this. I mean, it looks like you are exposing an entire sheriff's department in Mississippi. Let's begin with Eddie Parker.
Well, we want justice. We want justice for everyone that has gone through this with Rankin County, or gone through this because of Rankin County. We want justice for the ones that were afraid to speak up. You know, justice for the ones that can't speak up. We want something new and better, you know, and clean to come out of this.
And Michael Jenkins.
Basically, the same thing. To make sure that nobody never go through what we went through again. You know, animals don't get treated like this. You know, I ain't never seen no animal get treated like this.
Well,
just to make sure.
I just want to thank you, Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker, for your bravery in coming forward and telling your stories. And also, I want to thank Malik Shabazz, the civil rights attorney with Black Lawyers for Justice. Coming up, we're going to Detroit to talk to a woman who was falsely arrested and jailed while 8 months pregnant due to faulty AI facial recognition technology. She's the first woman to be arrested for this. Stay with us.
Looking at your picture, baby.
Your Face by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to another shocking story, this one out of Detroit, Michigan, involving a woman named Portia Woodruff, who was 8 months pregnant when police mistakenly arrested her for robbery and carjacking. Six officers showed up at her home when she was getting her little daughters ready for school. They took her down to the station, held her for 11 hours, then released her on $100,000 bonds. Portia Woodruff says she started having contractions in jail, had to be taken to the hospital after her release due to dehydration. A month later, after her arrest, prosecutors dropped the case because the Detroit police had made the arrest based on a faulty AI, artificial intelligence, facial recognition match. According to the ACLU, Portia Woodruff is the first woman, at least the sixth person, to report being falsely accused of a crime as a result of facial recognition technology. All six people have been Black. Portia Woodruff is now suing the city of Detroit. She joins us along with her attorney, Ivan Land. We thank you both very much for being with us. Portia, take us back to that day, and I hate to make you do this, but the fact that this happened to you may be a sign of things to come. You're the first woman to be arrested on faulty facial recognition technology. So you're getting your daughters ready for school. What happens next?
The six police officers came to knock on the door. I heard the big, the loud knock. I went down, I opened the door, and it was a female police officer at the door. She asked if I was Portia Woodruff. I confirmed, I said yes. She says, I have a warrant for your arrest. So in the beginning, of course, like I said, I thought it was a joke. So I asked, I said, warrant for what, you know, what is the warrant for? She hesitated. She procrastinated. She didn't want to, you know, give me any information. She just wanted me to step outside so that I could be arrested. So I continued to ask. Another police officer stepped up and interjected. He did say that I had a warrant for my arrest for carjacking. In the midst of the conversation, you know, I opened up my door a little bit wider so she could see, so that they could see, you know, I was 8 months pregnant. And I also pointed to my cars that were in the driveway at the time. You know, I'm like, I'm 8 months pregnant and, you know, I have a car right there. Why would I carjack anyone? So I went back and forth, you know, with the police officers for a while, trying to convince them that, you know, you have the wrong person. And my kids were standing there. So I eventually told my children to run upstairs and, you know, wake my fiance up to help me explain, you know, that they had the wrong person. I also called my mother to get her on the phone to help me explain, you know, you have the wrong person. You might want to check, you know, was the person 8 months pregnant? Do you have any more information? You know, getting into detail of, you know, why they were there trying to arrest me. So when we went back and forth for a while, I was just advised, you know, to go ahead and go and see what it was that they were trying to pin on me. The police officers, they took me, they handcuffed me, and they took me down to the detention center in Detroit, Michigan. I was held there. I was arraigned, and I was let out on a personal bond. While being in the detention center, I was experiencing, you know, back pain. I was 8 months pregnant. I was already having a difficulty pregnancy because I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes. When I was pregnant with my son, it was kind of hard to carry him, you know, being a little bit older and then being that he, you know, he was my third child. My pregnancy was a little bit difficult. So I was experiencing, you know, anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I was just trying to pretty much hold myself together because I didn't understand what was going on. At the time when it happened, I was just, you know, disbelief. I was already embarrassed. My children had seen me being arrested. Nobody knew what was going on. And then I lost hope for the most part, because once I talked to my family, they advised me that my lawyer wasn't even able to get me out. So I didn't know what to do. I was distraught. I was stressed. I was depressed. You know, I was trying to keep myself together and hold myself together for my unborn child, because being under that type of stress could have, you know, ultimately led me to lose my child.
And so when you got out, you ended up going to the hospital?
I did. I went to the hospital. They monitored me. I had to explain to them what was going on, because they seeing that I was under stress. My heart rate was low. The baby's heart rate was low. They had to give me fluids. They gave me two fluid vials because I was dehydrated. I didn't eat anything while I was in the detention center. The food there, I wouldn't give it to my dog. But I drunk a concentrated lemonade to try to hold me over. Like I said, it was more so about my unborn child at the time that I was trying to focus on, even though everything else was going on, because I felt like I had, you know, no control over what was going on, because I was feeling helpless. No one was listening to me. No one would listen to me. No one would take what I was saying seriously. It was as if I was already a suspect, you know? So with that being said, you know, that was a traumatizing experience. It still is. My kids are afraid. I'm afraid. The police get beside me or behind me, I go in a panic mode. Instantly, my children go into panic mode. Instantly, my kids thought I would have been shot. They seen police officers on my doorstep, you know, guns on their hips. They're saying I'm in the carjacking, and that's a, you know, armed robbery and carjacking. That's a serious crime.
I want to bring your lawyer in, Ivan Land, also in Detroit. Mr. Land, if you can talk about why you're suing the city of Detroit right now.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for having us. We're suing Detroit because we believe that facial recognition technology is an investigative tool, and you must use that tool properly. If you don't use the tool properly, someone would get hurt, and that's what happened with Ms. Woodruff. When Ms. Woodruff was arrested, prior to her being arraigned, the officer who viewed the video footage of the real suspect actually had an interview with Ms. Woodruff 2 hours before her arraignment. They had a conversation. She knew that Ms. Woodruff was 8 months pregnant. She took pictures of Ms. Woodruff, and she walked out of that cell, her and another detective, and they sent Ms. Woodruff back to a jail cell. Ms. Woodruff was subsequently arraigned and given a $100,000 personal bond. They was going to place a tether on Ms. Woodruff. At the time, I did not know this was going on. I attempted to have her released through something called a writ of habeas corpus, where I was challenging her incarceration. I learned, though, that the warrant had already been issued. Now, that detective could have walked her out of there with her, but they left Ms. Woodruff there. Ms. Woodruff was arraigned at around 2:30. She was released at 7 o'clock. But while Ms. Woodruff was incarcerated, Ms. Woodruff, thank God for her nursing background, Ms. Woodruff was in there practicing survival techniques. She was sitting for 30 minutes. She was standing for 30 minutes. She was checking her pulse. She knew she was losing it. Now, when the detective came to Ms. Woodruff thought she saw a breath of fresh air. Because guess what? The detective was a female. And Ms. Woodruff hoped that she had children. So she hoped that she knew what she was going through at 8 months pregnant. However, she left her there. Now, Ms. Woodruff was rushed to the hospital by her fiance. She said, get me to the hospital, because she was checking her pulse again. Thank God for her nursing background. Ms. Woodruff got to the hospital. They rushed her into a room, asked her what happened. Her baby heart rate was low. Her heart rate was low. They gave her some fluids. Ms. Woodruff was released at 3 a.m. in the morning. She was told that her doctor needed to contact her in 24 hours. Ms. Woodruff went home and got a little sleep. She headed back up to the police. Well, she called the police officer and asked, could she have her phone back, because her doctor's, it's the only way her children and the doctor could get in contact with it. And this detective doubled down and told her, we have to get a warrant. We want to check your phone to determine where you in the area when the crime was committed. So I'm suing the Detroit police for false arrest, false imprisonment, and malicious prosecution, and something called the Elliot Larson Act, which this facial recognition is biased towards darker or black individuals. So it's a racist technique that's been used, and it's not being used properly. So that's why we're suing.
For context on the racial disparity that plagues facial recognition software, I want to turn to Joy Bolamwini, who is head of the Justice Algorithmic League.
I have been so excited to see the reintroduction of the Facial Recognition and Biometric Technology Moratorium Act. And part of why I'm excited to see this reintroduction is there's an opportunity to put in protections. We've seen from cities from Oakland to Boston, where I'm at, Jackson, Mississippi, to Portland, Oregon, and Portland, Maine, that cities have actually put restrictions on the use of facial recognition technology. So what we saw happened, right, with an 8 months pregnant person being actually arrested would not have happened. And so we see that local efforts actually do make a difference, but we can't just hope you happen to live in a city that has adopted one of these measures. So that's why it's crucial we actually push forward with the federal legislation. So I am very excited to see the reintroduction of that act, and now's the time to push it forward. I also think—
I want to just say that's Joy Bolamwini, who is head of the Algorithmic Justice League. And I want to get Portia Woodruff's final comment before we go to a post show with Portia and Ivan Land. Your thoughts on this final point of coded bias, that AI is biased against people of color.
Well, I feel like it's biased. As noted, I'm the sixth person.
And the first woman.
Only female. That has been affected by this facial recognition. I feel like with its use, it should be properly used to actually identify.
Portia Woodruff, we're going to ask you to save that thought for part two. Portia Woodruff and Ivan Land, thanks so much for joining us. This is Democracy Now!
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Follow us on social media at CJSF on Twitter, on Facebook and Instagram at CJSF Radio. Listen to old episodes and special programming on our SoundCloud at CJSF 90.1. Diverse, independent, and yours.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.